Hello and welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Happy Monday to you. Been away for a few days. Hope you had a few days off. And you're back from your traveling. I am Cy Kellett, your host. And this hour, we're going to talk about how to answer tough moral questions. How do we go about answering those? Well, we got the man himself here to help us do that. Trent Horn is an apologist here at Catholic Answers, speaker and debater extraordinaire, and the author of like 1,000 books, including Hard Sayings, A Catholic Approach to Answering Bible Difficulties, Why We're Catholic, Answering Atheism, Persuasive Pro-Life, and this one I have in my hand right now, his newest, which is a cooperative effort with Layla Miller, Made This Way, How to Prepare Kids to Face Today's Tough Moral Issues. Hello, Trent, and welcome back.
Good to be back. I would say I'm the author of 1,000 books, give or take 993.
Okay, yeah.
So it's somewhere within a margin of 993, yeah, something like that.
Sometimes I use hyperbole.
You always use hyperbole.
Every time.
Every sentence you speak is
hyperbolic. I'm always hyperbolizing. Jesus used hyperbole too.
That's correct. He did.
I believe. But I'm not comparing myself to him. I'm just saying that if he used it, it's okay to use hyperbole.
It's okay to imitate Jesus. 1 Corinthians 11:1, St. Paul says, imitate me as I imitate Christ. Though I don't recall Jesus using hyperbole in every single instance. Sometimes he was just straightforward and to the point.
Yes, he didn't always use hyperbole. He used it like a million times, though.
Yeah. Well, you could approximate it that way, give or take 999,987.
You're applying precision to language that hyperbole does not permit of.
I'm doing so in kind of an ironic way that shouldn't be taken literally.
Got it. Fair enough.
Mm-hmm, indeed. No, it's good to be here. I'm excited to talk about the book Made This Way and answer questions people have about how to explain tough moral issues and talk about them, because they're in the news. Two that jump out of my mind, and we can run off in any direction you like in talking about them.
Okay.
One is Twitter just recently announced that it will suspend accounts that consistently engage in what they call misgendering or dead naming. And that's the idea that if someone who identifies as transgender, if you refer to them by either their previous legal name, so in the case of Caitlyn Jenner, Bruce Jenner,
yeah,
or by the pronoun that describes their biological sex instead of their self-identified gender. So if I said Bruce Jenner says that he has always felt like he is a woman, or if I said something like that, yeah, and I put it on Twitter and I did it consistently, my account will, they claim, will be suspended, and they won't tolerate that. And so the question is, what will we do, people who believe in truth, when we are on social media websites, which are essentially the public square now?
Yeah.
There was a time where you could get together in a literal public square,
right,
and kind of shout things and dispute with people. Now it's all online. This is the public square. Will we retreat from the public square? Will we speak our minds?
Yeah.
And if we are banished from a public square, create our own? I don't know. But that gets into issues related, of course, to transgender and how to approach that issue, how to talk about it with other people, and how to defend the church's teaching on what it means to be a man or a woman. So that's something we cover in Made This Way.
If you have tough moral issues you'd like to discuss with Trent, 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. I'm coming back to the Twitter one.
Sure.
But you said there were two. What's the other one?
The other one is I'm writing an article for this for our online magazine, and I think I'm going to talk about it tomorrow on my podcast, Counsel of Trent, C-O-U-N-S-E-L, if listeners are interested, they can find it, trenthornpodcast.com. So I'll be discussing this more at length tomorrow. But it's that story of, I think his name was John Allen Chow. He was killed while attempting to evangelize a lost tribe on North Sentinel Island, one of the few remaining lost tribes in the world, one that has consistently for decades rejected, many times with violence, contact with modern civilization.
Right.
And so he went there, got a few arrows shot at him, still refused to give up, and the fishermen who brought him to the island have reported back that they've saw his dead body being dragged around. And there has been a lot of backlash I have read from commenters saying that the real crime here is not that he was killed, but that he was there in the first place trying to impose cultural imperialism, trying to impose his morality and religion on these this tribe that should be allowed to be isolated from the rest of the world, which I think has a lot of moral intuitions backwards when we talk about that. So I'll be discussing that tomorrow on my podcast. And listeners want to hear more, that will be available probably later tomorrow evening at trenhornpodcast.com.
I think I'm an emotional person about certain things. I get emotional about certain things. And this one, when those things are being reported in the news, I just stop. I don't follow those stories. Maybe that's a bad strategy. I don't know. But this is one of those. I just can't stand reading about it. It makes me so mad.
What makes you mad?
A couple things. One, blaming this man. Two, the very idea of treating a society that's living a Stone Age life where many immoral things are going on in that society as far as we know, and treating that as if the people in that society who, frankly, I'm going to be honest with you, are being oppressed by their leaders on that society, just the same way that many
this is an example. What's funny here is, and I am just jumping at the chance to do this because there's especially people in academia that I would be literally excommunicated in the academic world.
I get really emotional about this because that's wrong. It's right. morally
but
wrong.
But you're
what's
not
being
allowed.
Done.
You're not allowed to say that. You're not allowed to say that certain cultures are like this one. Uncivilized.
Uncivilized, right. It's cruel the way these people treat their children, the way women are treated there. And it's not a human right to be protected from civilization. That is not a human right. That's cruelty.
Now, here's the irony, though, and I'll talk about this more on my podcast tomorrow, that the same critics will say that John Alan Chow and others who go and preach the gospel to remote tribes are hurting them by imposing their morality and their beliefs on these tribes.
He didn't impose on anyone. Sorry.
No, he's not. Right.
I'm sorry to interrupt you.
He's not imposing. That these are the same people who say we have a moral duty to get people to use contraception in Africa and change their minds about homosexuality.
Yeah, right.
They're the same people who will believe in spreading their gospel to Africa and Midwest America.
They believe in the myth of the noble primitive.
Right. That's also been called the myth of the peaceful savage. Yeah. And there's a great book that was written.
And it's cruel.
And
I'm
wrong.
Sorry.
And it's wrong.
Yes.
It's wrong. And that's what I'll talk about in my article that'll go up tomorrow, is that when you look at – there's a great book written in the late 90s called War Before Civilization, the myth of the peaceful savage.
Right.
The idea here is that these people who are indigenous, have never been exposed to Western influences, are just pure, uncorrupt, and that's what we should be like.
Right.
And you know, our evil Western world is to blame when things go wrong in the world.
That's just an anti-Christian lie is what it is.
It is, because as I think Keeley is his name, who wrote the book War Before Civilization, he says that in the prehistoric world, people were far more violent than they were today. That if you were to give, if we use the tactics, Stone Age tactics were used in the 20th century in World War I and World War II, there would have been a 2 billion person body count. That you can see in burial grounds in South Dakota, for example, mounds covered with the remains of men, women, and children who had been shot with arrows and then scalped indiscriminately.
Right.
So when people say this, they misunderstand the nature. They have a romanticized view of pre-civilized existence or those who have a remote non-Western existence. And they also mischaracterize Christianity and the good that Christianity does in the world. So when you bring up missions and things like this, people will, you know, that's another moral issue. But so there's lots of different moral issues to talk about. But I'm interested in people calling in. If there is a tough moral issue, either you disagree with the church on or you are wondering how to articulate it better, could be a sexuality issue, homosexuality, transgender, could be a life issue, abortion, euthanasia, could be a social issue, could be war, capital punishment, whatever it may be. We can chat and talk about how to articulate the church's view of the good life and how to pursue the good and how to avoid evil.
And if you believe that people should be left in violent, child-abusing, war-making, murderous societies and not interfered with by the modern world, I invite that call. You see, I do get really emotional about it, Trent. I'm not neutral at all, and so I try to avoid it because I get myself in trouble. 888-318-7884 is the number. If you have a tough moral question you want to talk about, 888-318-7884. I will say this. I do want to moderate slightly. I don't think that young man should have gone to that island in the way that he did.
Well, we can have there can be a question about prudence.
Yeah.
Like, is it a good idea to go to an island where you're certain people will reject you with violence where you go to try to preach the gospel.
Or that you're putting them in danger with the diseases you carry.
Right.
I think
because,
that
because there might be – you don't want to kill people that you're trying to evangelize. I'm firmly in favor of having a discussion about that, and that is a legitimate concern. But for many people, if I were to say, okay, well, why don't we go there with vaccinations and medicine?
Yeah.
So they won't – we'll vaccinate them against measles and the flu.
Right.
They won't – that way they – we'll vaccinate them. We'll come back in 6 months, and then we'll evangelize them. The objection you're being a cultural imperialist will rear its head.
Yeah.
Right. That's the real problem that people have.
Right.
That's the real issue they're concerned about.
Yeah, fair enough. 888-318-7884 is the number. Trent Horn is our guest, our topic, answering tough moral questions. How do we go about answering tough moral questions? Today and tomorrow only at Catholic Answers, all Catholic Answers ebooks, MP3s, e-magazines, and Catholic Answers speakers DVDs are half price. Just visit the ebooks, MP3s, e-magazines, and Catholic Answers speakers DVD categories at shop.catholic.com. Today only until midnight, shipping on Made This Way, Trent's book that we are discussing a bit this afternoon, will be free. That is, there's no shipping charge. It's free shipping. And then there's all kinds of other deals. You just go to shop.catholic.com. Promo code CALIVE18 right now gets you, this has changed, 30% off checkout, plus free shipping on an order over $40. So all that stuff, go check it out at shop.catholic.com. I think we're trying to compete with the big cyber, whatever they call them, Cyber Mondays and the cyber – is there a Cyber Tuesday? I don't even know. Is cyber tomorrow Cyber Tuesday? I'm looking at – it's Cyber Week. We just – okay. And soon we will all be shopping cyborgs. But go to shop.catholic.com and get your deals today.
There's only one. Catholic Answers Live. Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their faith and values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
The Trump administration rolls back the Health and Human Services contraceptive mandate.
U.S. bishops calling for the total elimination of nuclear weapons.
Pope Francis offers prayers for the victims of the California wildfires.
The U.S. House of Representatives has passed a bill banning abortions after 20 weeks.
And Pope Francis says the death penalty is contrary to the gospel.
Your link to news headlines Catholics count on at the top of the hour. Weekdays on EWTN Radio.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Trent Horn, one of the two authors of Made This Way, How to Prepare Kids to Face Today's Tough Moral Issues, is our guest this hour and next. And we're going to talk about tough moral issues, answering tough moral issues. It's something that our society is not good at. I would suggest to you, in part, and I am going to go to calls because all the lines are lighting up now, but in part because we have become very sentimental. We don't like thinking through moral issues. We like following our feelings.
Yeah, and that's how a lot of people feel when it comes to moral issues. They go with their gut on an issue first.
Right.
And sometimes that can be correct, but a lot of times we worry more about offending or hurting others, or we seek to avoid pain, and we don't think clearly through the consequences of our actions and whether they're right or wrong. And we also don't think about the big picture, which is maybe in one isolated case, this would be a great shortcut. We should just allow this. And we don't see the harm that would cause – that would ensue, that if what if everyone starts doing this? Is that the kind of world that you want to live in? Like, and that's one way. This goes back to Immanuel Kant, who, I mean, that morality is not identical to Catholic morality, but there's a little bit of overlap. You might think in the situation, well, you know, if I just cheat on this test, you know, no one's going to get hurt. I just need to get this grade, get through this class. It'll be fine. Now, aside from the harm it does to your own soul and your own integrity as a person, you have to think to yourself, well, what if everyone thought like you did? Everybody cheats where they think helps them to get ahead. Do you really want your doctor to have cheated in his one pathology exam and he doesn't really know as much about medicine as he should? We think many of our moral actions only within our limited sphere, and we don't widen it out to other people to see whether they truly are right or wrong, good or evil.
888-318-7884. Let's start with Ted in Nebraska. Ted, thank you for your call. I'm not sure exactly what station Ted's listening to, but it's probably Spirit Catholic Radio if it's in Nebraska. And Ted, you are on with Trent Horn. Your question, please.
Hi, guys. Thanks, Trent, for all you do.
Sure. Thank you.
I am currently in a debate with a fallen away Catholic friend of mine. Is very disturbed by the priest sexual abuse scandal. We've had quite a few discussions, and he is not discriminating between post-pubescent assault that occurred and pedophilia, because most of them, if they're under 18 or 19, they're mom. So we're at a bit of an impasse as to how to discuss that. I was wondering if you had any insights that I could take to him. He's concerned that it's a power abuse only, a hierarchical issue with the church, and a power abuse rather than any other issue regarding maybe active homosexuality in the ranks of the priest.
Sure. So it sounds like you both agree that the scandal is scandalous, obviously. The disagreement you two are having is about what is the cause behind this certain percentage of priests engaging in sexual behavior with minors. Though, and it sounds like your friend agrees, at least statistically, in the majority of these cases, this was abuse involving post-pubescent boys or boys entering puberty. And so the question is, how is this related? And it sounds like he doesn't think that homosexuality has anything to do to this. So just to re-summarize, you guys are, you're in a dispute about the technical issue about what caused this, what is behind this, and how to move forward with that. I think one thing you could bring up to him is say, look, would you agree that this is probably a complex issue? You're dealing with lots of different people across 7 or 8 decades in many different parts of the country, that it's going to be multifaceted, and there's probably more than one cause. And that this is something that we see in all types of institutions. If you have an institution, you'll probably find something like this. And I actually wrote an article about this at Catholic.com. You can search, the title is Sex Abuse a Catholic Problem? You could send that to him, and that might be helpful to continue the conversation. But the question of whether homosexuality has anything to do with this, he's saying he doesn't see how it's related at all.
Right, and he's saying there's a higher percentage of priests that there's obviously some issue with even the fact that a person would want to become a priest or something socially amiss with them, that it's not a homosexual issue. It's just a
what he thinks there's something wrong with a person who would choose to become a priest.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, he sees it as at least a celibate priest or a priest that works towards celibacy. I think he mm-hmm. would argue that married priests would solve this problem, et cetera, et cetera.
I guess what I would steer you to then would be two studies that might be helpful. One dealing with the issue of celibacy, and a newer study dealing with the issue of homosexuality in the priesthood. First, you could point him to the John Jay Report. This is a report done in 2011. Sir, it's the largest survey that's been done on the Catholic clergy abuse scandal in the United States from 1950 to 2010. And the John Jay Report detailed the rise in sexual abuse cases, hitting their peak between 1960 and between 1960 and 1980, and then declining since then. And what the John Jay Report found, it did not see homosexuality as being a link, but it did not see celibacy as being a contributing factor to the sex abuse scandal. What it found really were people who were admitted to the priesthood who had previous psychological issues. So if they were involved in some kind of substance abuse, drug abuse, if they came from a sexually repressive home where they were never even taught about sex, for example, and sex was a completely taboo subject, so they had an unhealthy sexuality, it was those priests, the John Jay Report found, were more likely to abuse. The problem is, if someone says that celibacy is the driving factor behind clergy sex abuse, that doesn't explain why there was a sudden rise in abuse cases between the 1960s and the 1980s, and then a decline, that you see this rise and fall, and the numbers, a dramatic rise, really. And now, statistically, hardly any since after 2002. But celibacy has not changed in any of that time period. Something else must have changed. The biggest thing that's changed is the instituting of mandatory reporting requirements and better psychological screening for candidates for seminary, as well as reporting for those who are accused of sexual abuse. John Jay Report would be one. Just search a John Jay Report to send to him. The other is a new one that just came out a few weeks ago from the Ruth Institute. It's by Father Paul Sullins. It's on the role of sexual orientation in the Catholic clerical abuse scandal. And what that study shows is that it's not homosexuality per se that makes someone more likely to abuse, but if you have large numbers of people in kind of secluded environments who have a same-sex orientation and a need to cover that up or keep that private, you have all the ingredients that come together for abuse to happen. So that's why Father Paul Sullins, and that's available at the Ruth Institute, has just released that. So I think looking at that, you can show them how the answer, it's not like black or white, but all this put together shows that it's not that sex abuse. So that, oh, stay on the line. I will send you, I'll get your email. I'll send you that blog I wrote that is Catholic sex abuse. Is sex abuse a Catholic problem? I will send that to you. And that can help him kind of see the bigger picture on this. So I'll stop there. Is that helpful right there?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Okay, great. Yeah, and if you need anything else, feel free to call back or ask any other questions. But I think that, Cy, that's what we have to show people is that when this happens, this is not a distinctly Catholic problem. It is a human problem you see in all kinds of institutions. And so it requires solutions that work across a wide variety of institutions. And what the Catholic Church has adopted since 2002 has actually been working very well. When we see allegations of sex abuse surfacing, it's usually uncovering more bad things that happened back in the latter part of the 20th century or even the early part of the 20th century. And it makes me sick to hear about this. And so I don't think that we should not whitewash this. We have to come to grips with how horrible this is. But at the same time, we shouldn't overreact and jump ship, if you will, because anywhere you try to run to this particular sin, when you have organizations of people, this sin will creep in there. Abuse, you know, whether it's physical, sexual abuse, harassment, when you get human beings together into organizations, they're likely to exploit and victimize one another. That's why you need transparency. You need checks and balances. And I'm thankful the church has instituted that. And we, as the faithful laity, should encourage and write to our bishops to ask them for more of these measures to be implemented, to have transparency and have proper accountability no matter who you are in the church, from layperson, priest, bishop on up.
Thanks very much for that call. Let us go now to Jill in San Antonio, listening on Guadalupe Radio. We're talking with Trent Horn about how to discuss, how to answer tough moral issues. Jill, your question for Trent.
Yeah, it actually follows real well with the prior caller. I was having a discussion with my daughter about homosexual relationships, and she had a reason that she proposed for why she said that there's no place within the Catholic Church where the homosexual kind of attitudes are acceptable. And I said, you know, you can have a relationship, just not marriage. So she had some counters for that, but she said, you know, that's why we have a disproportionate amount of boys being abused as opposed to girls. She said that, you know, there is a lower percentage in the Catholic Church of abuse than other institutions, but a higher percentage of abuse of boys and men. And she felt like, you know, that her stance is that homosexuality is a natural thing and that there are even animals that have homosexual relationships. Mm-hmm. She said that there's maybe penguins that had adopted, you know, same sex, you know, with an adoption. And I didn't have any data.
Tango makes three. I remember that story. Yeah.
And she said, you know, even if you have, and this is a, you know, I'm going off in this three different directions, but she said there should be a legal recognition of same-sex unions, because even if there's no sex, they should be able, you know, if their partner, their lifelong partner, even if they've been celibate with that person, but if they're in the hospital, they can't go person when they're dying if
sure.
they're not legally married.
Well,
there should be some recognition of that union. So right. I'll stop.
Yeah, yeah, because I want you to stay on the line, and I hope you'll stay with us to the break because we have our break coming up here in a minute. But two things. Number one, the church is not opposed in principle to recognizing domestic partnerships. These could be between same-sex couples, whatever they might be. I mean, you could have a widow who moves in with her sister and they form a legal household to have legal benefits. The church is not opposed to giving legal benefits to households of varying kinds. But as to the question of whether homosexuality is natural or unnatural and the quote-unquote same-sex married penguins in Central Park Zoo, I have some thoughts on that when we return.
Hang on, Jill. We'll get to that when we come back. We're not pulling any punches today. It is an opportunity to discuss tough moral issues with Trent Horn. We'll be right back with more of that after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Your questions, Catholic Answers Live.
A generation ago, Christian parents didn't have to worry about how to explain transgenderism to their 9-year-old or help their teenager deal with mockery at school for believing in traditional marriage. But today, as our culture's moral center continues to fly apart, and with every form of deviance publicly aired and celebrated, we have no choice but to equip our kids to understand about such issues. In Made This Way, How to Prepare Kids to Face Today's Tough Moral Issues, Layla Miller and Trent Horn give parents the crucial tools and techniques to form children with the understanding they need, appropriate to their age and maturity level, to meet the world's challenges. Silence can no longer be an option. If we're not teaching our children how to understand tough moral issues, then the world will. Read Made This Way and learn how to give your kids a firm foundation on which to build a life of moral clarity and happiness. Order your copy of Made This Way today by calling 1-888-291-8000 or logging on to the shop at Catholic.com.
Wouldn't it be great to have a book to give to anyone to explain exactly why Catholics believe what we believe? The good news is that now there is. Why We're Catholic is the groundbreaking new resource by apologist Trent Horn. That one book you can hand to anyone as a starting point for helping them find their way into, or back to, the practice of the Catholic faith. Don't miss out on the most important, life-changing book to come along in years. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Hi, this is Dr. David Anders. What's stopping you from becoming a Catholic? Let's talk about it on Call to Communion tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio. Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Our guest today, Trent Horn. Trent is the author of many things. His latest book with Layla Miller is Made This Way, How to Prepare Kids to Face Today's Tough Moral Issues. And tough moral issues is what we are discussing today. If you have questions about how to explain tough moral issues, we're here to help. 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. When we went to the break, we're talking with Jill in San Antonio, listening on Guadalupe Radio, about explaining the morality of homosexuality. Is that correct? Did I sum that up correctly?
That is correct. So, Jill, are you still there? Hello? Are you still there, Jill?
I am here.
Okay,
yeah,
great.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah, first, I would say that your daughter brings up the claim that, and this is actually great because we cover this in our book, Made This Way, I wrote with Layla Miller, and we'll send you a copy before we let you go so you can read through it more, because we have three chapters on homosexuality in the book that I think you'll find helpful for explaining this subject to young people. But the argument that sexual behavior between two men or two women is morally good, or it's okay because it's natural in the sense that we see it in nature, that doesn't mean it's natural or good for humans. Because you can point out there's lots of things that happen in the animal world that are quote unquote natural, but they're not natural for human beings, or in the sense that they go against our human nature. They're bad for us because we're human. We can think rationally. We understand good and evil. We know how to not act like animals. So in the animal world, for example, what we would call forcible copulation, when one animal mounts another animal and in order to impregnate them, even while they're, you know, kicking and screaming and squealing or whatever it may be, if humans did that, that would be called rape. So with humans, we understand that sex is not just for fulfilling an instinct. That in the animal world, sex is just an instinct. You just engage in it to fulfill whatever instinctual feeling that you have. Animals don't have marriage. I know your daughter referenced New York Times in 2004 talked about the two penguins that raised that chick. Their names were Roy and Silo. What people actually don't often mention with that story is that later, so Roy and Silo kind of raised a female chick together, and they were supposedly, you know, two male penguins in love with each other. But Silo later left Roy in 2008 for another female penguin. So that's a part of the story no one ever brings up. So that's my little footnote on that story that was brought
Life
up.
Life is just not fair.
Right. So does that see that point you can make? Just because homosexual behavior occurs in nature, there's lots of immoral things that happen in nature. That doesn't mean we should imitate it. Instead, we should ask as human beings with brains, well, what is sex for? Animals use sex for whatever. We have boundaries for it. What is it for? And when we ask that question, we come up with usually two answers. It's for procreation and for unity, but a particular kind of unity, to unite men and women together in a life-giving bond. So that might be the direction that I would take the conversation. Is that helpful?
Well, except for she would say that, you know, it's life-giving to, you know, people of the same sex.
Well, I would say to her, Right. I would ask her then, what does life-giving mean? When I say life-giving, I mean that it's a union, that what sex is for, it's ordered towards love that can produce a new life. That's what life-giving means. That if sex is, if we look at sex and we just ask, what is it for? If we don't put procreation in there somewhere, then if we just say it's just a feeling, it's just an instinct, it's just something that feels good, you kind of throw nearly all sexual rules out the window. But when we say procreation's in there, when I say it's life-giving, if two men or two women engage in this, it's not ordered towards any kind of creation of a new human life. Now, you might have, for example, a couple, one member is fertile, the other is infertile. The act is still oriented towards creating of a new human life, even if it's not achieving that. An example we give in the book is that what makes a baseball team is that they're ordered towards winning games. Even if they have a terrible season and they lose every single game, they're still a baseball team. But nine guys catching pop flies on a Saturday afternoon, that's not a baseball team. It's not ordered towards that end. So what sex is for, it's ordered towards this life-giving end, even if it isn't always achieved. So we'll send you a copy of Made This Way, and you can go through it more in detail in the three chapters, because we cover similar objections like this in the church's teaching on homosexuality. So stay on the line, and we'll send that to you.
Thanks, Jill. Answering tough moral questions is our topic today. Trent Horn is our guest. We go now to Renato in Paraguay, listening on the EWTN app. Renato, thanks so much. That's our first Paraguayan call in a long time. Great to have you, Renato. Your question.
Hi, good evening, Sai, good evening, Trent, big fan of the show. I wanted to call regarding comments I heard at the beginning of the show tonight. You were commenting about certain countries' behavior regarding children. And, I sometimes think that you lose perspective on the fact that your radio is being listened all over the world. Hmm. I mean, don't you agree that it's at least 10 away or too light to encompass entire countries in offensive behavior, simply because some of its inhabitants are engaging in such unethical behavior?
Hang on a second, Renato. It's a little bit difficult to hear you. And
yeah, I didn't quite follow everything that you said. I don't recall ever saying that an entire country was engaging in some kind of immoral behavior. I don't recall saying something like that. Can you clue me in on what I'm missing here?
Yeah, no, not the word entire, but when you mention countries where certain brutalities are being portrayed, which is, of course, true, We also have to keep in mind that judging countries based on the behavior of a few individuals is a temerity. It's just like saying that Americans are all children killers because 60 million children have been aborted. I mean, that'd be unfair for me or for anyone to say.
Well, Renato, let me jump in here. I see what you're saying, that earlier, and we've got a few other callers who have a question about this, so we'll get to them in a minute because I think we might have passed over the discussion too quickly. At the beginning of the show, we were talking about how John Allen Chau, the American missionary, was killed trying to evangelize the people of North Sentinel Island. They are a lost tribe in the Andaman Islands in the Bay of Bengal, about 1,000 miles off the Indian East Coast. And they're a lost tribe. They're one of the few in the world. There might only be about 15 people, maybe 100. We're not entirely sure how many, who reject outside modern influences. And so they killed Chau when he came on shore. And they're very aggressive to outsiders. What Cy and I were talking about in the discussion and what made us upset was not even so much, I mean, I think it's sad that these people killed this guy who was just trying to share the gospel with them. What both of us are kind of indignant about are Western reporters and commenters who are casting Chau as like some kind of imperialist villain. Whereas this seemed to be a good-hearted man who was trying to just share the gospel. Maybe he wasn't doing it in the most prudent way possible, but he cared about these people. He wanted to bring them to a knowledge of our Savior Jesus Christ. And what Cy and I were concerned about are people who believe this myth of the peaceful. It's called the myth of the peaceful savage. Now, I'm not saying indigenous people are savages, or I'm not using that as like a slur. There have been books written about this that people believe that evil and sin is primarily something that comes from a Western influence. And they just believe that indigenous peoples or lost tribes, they would be better off not being exposed to Western influences because they live peaceful, upright, moral lives much better than us. And that's just simply not true. When you look at the data, you see sin in all cultures, both historic and prehistoric. And sometimes, and what I showed in the Keeley book, that there is even more violence among people in prehistoric times than in modern times. And so we can safely assume, or it's a safe bet, that if you have modern lost tribes that operate with a Stone Age mentality, they probably have Stone Age morality, which is in dire need of an upkeep, which is where the gospel will come in handy to teach them about how we ought to live and love one another. That is all we're saying. And now we might have other callers here who disagree with some of this, but and I'm happy to talk with you about that. But I do believe that we don't have some kind of moral duty to not share the gospel with other people in order to preserve their culture. Someone can keep their culture and still believe in Jesus. The Catholic Church has 22 rites around the world where the faith is celebrated in a wide variety of different cultures. You go to a mass in Africa or a mass in Lebanon, or you go to one here in the U.S., the cultural aspects will feel very different, but it's still the same faith. It's the same Eucharist. The question here is, are we going to deprive people of the knowledge of our Savior Jesus Christ and the ability to receive him in baptism and the Eucharist for the sake of not being called cultural imperialists? That's where I think things kind of go wrong. But thank you for calling, and I hope that's helpful.
Thanks, Renato. Thanks very much. You're so much less emotional about it than I am, Trent, because I just have to stop talking about it. 888-318-7884. I have to say, it's the attitude that human beings can be kept in a place as if it's a museum and they are museum pieces that is just seems to me sick to its core. Mm-hmm. People are not museum pieces.
What do you mean? You mean if someone has a particular culture that we should say, well, we shouldn't
interfere. Don't touch it because it's a museum piece. These are human beings, and that's not right. But I will say this, that the other side of it is that, like, for example, I was thinking the other day about the now the European Union is trying to open up a Greek island that has always been reserved for men because there's a male monastery on it. And they say this is bigotry on the part of these monks to mm-hmm. only men are allowed on this little island.
Well women have Themyscira.
Now you're talking about Wonder Woman, I think.
Themyscira, an island of only women.
Okay, but my point is there is a way in which Western culture is like a steamroller that just destroys all local distinctions. And Western people are proud of it. They're proud of the fact that we're going to go in there and show these medieval monks that they can't keep women off this island.
Right.
And they're proud. They really feel proud.
There is a
line.
So
I agree with those people that say, no, you can't just have modern society come in and just steamroll everything.
Right.
That's wrong.
The complete obliteration of a culture.
Yeah.
That true imperialism that is wrong would be one that takes every aspect of another culture, subverts or destroys it to create essentially a carbon copy of your own culture.
Which is what?
Among these people. And that's why the church, that's why in my article will go up tomorrow, I quote from Orientarum Ecclesiam, which is the Second Vatican Council's document on the Eastern churches.
Yeah.
Talking about here where there can be harmony with variety within the church. And so different churches and rites around the world, you can celebrate your faith and the good aspects of Western influence, that where we've believed in an understanding of justice, of providing technology and modern medicine to help improve people's lives, that these are all good things, that what we should not do is introduce evil things like many modern Western organizations want to promote contraception or abortion or homosexuality, for example, or taking away other people's traditions unnecessarily. As long as it does not contradict our Catholic faith, people can hold on to older customs and older traditions. And so we have to have some kind of a tolerance here. That's why I believe 500 years ago or however many centuries it was ago when the Jesuits first reached China to evangelize, I think one of the greatest missed opportunities there was not channeling that in China there was a great respect for one's ancestors, but it rose to the point of ancestor worship. And I think that was dealt with too heavy a hand.
From the Vatican.
Right. And that could have been channeled more into proper veneration of one's ancestors. Like we have veneration for the saints. And that because of this, the gospel has been locked out of East Asia, China and Japan for, a very, very long time. And we're still just trying to make inroads there, where if things had changed, two or three centuries ago, it might have been completely different. So it's always a tightrope act. You don't want to obliterate someone's culture.
No.
But you also don't want to say, well, whatever their culture practices is fine. Because in the Far East, they practice foot binding until British colonists said, no, you can't disfigure the feet of five-year-old girls. In India, they practice sati, which is where you throw a widow on top of her husband's funeral pyre. It was even at the time, the British colonists tolerated this. It was missionaries like William Wilberforce.
Who said, nope.
And William Wilberforce, as you recall from study world history, was one of the driving proponents of abolition and critics of the Atlantic slave trade.
Yes.
He also worked very hard against the caste system and practices like sati in India.
Or just think about the struggle today against the mutilation of girls.
Female genital mutilation.
Right, that's bad. That's not just different. That's wrong. That's cruel.
And a line has to be drawn, and that's why even some atheists, that's why I enjoy, for example, Sam Harris, who is one of the quote-unquote new atheists, he is probably more critical of secular liberals who are moral relativists who think, well, these things are just fine. We can't say they're wrong. That I think, honestly, Harris is more upset at secular liberals who refuse to criticize aspects of Islam out of fear of being called bigots than Christians. He's even said that, at least with Christianity, Harris has said, Christianity has a principle, give to Caesar what is Caesar's, give to God what is God's.
Yeah.
But in Islam, there's no such thing. Yeah. So you're right. I think finding that proper balance is what we need.
Yeah, like St. Patrick did in Ireland.
Right.
Where he accepted the Irish. He loved the Irish, even though he wasn't an Irishman himself. But he loved the Irish and their customs. But he knew they needed the gospel. Right. And I'll tell you the truth. Well, Ireland is a lot better after the gospel than before it.
Oh, Patrick. There's that great Lutheran satire video. Oh, Patrick.
Hey, what's going on over at your podcast, the Council of Trent, where you can locate it by just putting TrentHorrorPodcast.com into your computer machine?
That is correct. We are talking about a lot of different subjects, both current events. I'll be talking more about this issue, about missionaries and evangelizing other cultures tomorrow. I also have some podcasts up from the previous week. talking about all different aspects of the faith, how to understand the first commandment better, how to be able to evangelize other people, how to defend your faith when people ask really tough questions. And on Fridays, I do really fun things. Like last Friday for Black Friday, I did Trent's Tips for Saving Money, for example. So on Friday, I do fun things. But Monday through Thursday, not that they aren't fun, more focused on theology and apologetics. Daily podcast. Well, a new one will go up tomorrow. I'm still coming off my Thanksgiving hangover today. Turkey hangover, I would say. Just actually ham. I prefer ham on Thanksgiving than turkey. So
so many people do.
My
dad's the same way.
Yeah.
He usually does a ham.
Right. So that is another great content, including bonus content, are available at trendhornpodcast.com. If you are a subscriber, you make a donation, you can get a nifty t-shirt, access to previews of my new audiobook of Why We're Catholic, and other insights and new things I'll be doing, including insights into my pilgrimage I'll be doing this summer in May to Greece in the footsteps of St. Paul, going to Athens, Corinth, as well as going to Patmos, where John wrote Revelation, Greece and the Adriatic Sea. I'm really excited about it. And if our listeners want to learn more about that, they can go to Greece2019.com.
And the footsteps of Paul, are they like dinosaur footsteps where you can see them there in the ground, or not quite?
The footsteps were there at one point, but they have been lost to the sands of time.
If
you look really hard, you can imagine them being there.
Okay, fair enough. Go to TrentHordePodcast.com to find out all about what Trent's up to.
Hang on. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
You know what Catholic radio is? It's training for the troops. It's a interaural of the ear boot camp. The folks who listen, who grow in their faith, grow in charity, grow in all the virtues, they then go out and exert an influence far beyond just themselves. Catholic radio has an exponential effect for bringing people deeper into the faith.
Dr. Ray Guarendi thinks Catholic radio is important. So should you.
We have a big problem. Our culture is dying, and souls are in danger of being lost. The answer is conversion to Jesus Christ in His church. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a Catholic organization, and we have hundreds of teams spreading the good news throughout the country. But we need your help. The harvest is great, but the laborers are few. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Trent Horn, our guest both hours. So if you have a question for Trent and we don't get to you by the top of this hour, just hang on. We'll get to you. And if you haven't dialed yet, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884. Our topic, tough moral issues. How do we answer those tough moral issues? Trent will help you work through that. Trent is an apologist here at Catholic Answers and an author extraordinaire. And as we said before the break, a podcaster, which is the highest level of human being now, I think. Podcaster is the highest you can go as a human being. If you're a podcaster, you are it.
I would hope there might be a tad bit higher.
Really?
Saint might be one.
Really? Maybe Saint higher than podcaster.
Yeah, it goes venerable, podcaster, blessed, saint. Is that right? I think that's
so
how it is.
Venerable is below podcaster.
So it's
huh?
I guess...
Wow.
I don't
Fulton
think
Sheen.
Is he a podcaster still, or is he now just blessed? So
no,
he's not a podcaster anymore.
He's venerable Fulton Sheen, right? He's still venerable Fulton Sheen. Darren says he thinks so.
He might get a podcast next year. We'll see.
Why does Darren never get on the microphone?
I don't know.
He's got an aversion. Every now and then we've snuck him on the microphone.
Is a man of few words. It reminds me of President Calvin Coolidge was once asked in a bet, "I bet I can get you to say three words." And he said in response, "You lose."
I know. Silent Cal, they called him.
That's right.
If only we could have a president like Silent Cal again. I mean, modern presidents never stop. They just never stop. Since I think Eisenhower was somewhat reserved. But since Eisenhower, we've not had a single president who has the humility just to be quiet sometimes.
No, instead we've gotten a string of them that are great for impersonations.
They are.
There is an uninterrupted string of presidents that are all ripe for impersonation.
Yeah, right. Since Eisenhower, uninterrupted string of impersonatable presidents.
Well, if you were to do that,
because they don't stop talking.
Well, read my lips. I told you so. That strategery. And
look at you doing the whole group. But you can't do John Kennedy, though. Even though Kennedy was the first.
When I read the book about Neil Armstrong to my son, I read it in a normal voice until it gets to John F. Kennedy. We will put a man on the moon and bring him safely back to the Earth.
Yeah, why did we choose to go? Not because it is easy?
But because we have to show the Soviets who's boss.
But because it is hard.
We're having too much fun.
Wait, did we have a call we were talking to before we went to the break? I can't remember. No, we don't have somebody hanging on. Let's go to Anonymous in Dublin, Ohio, listening on St. Gabriel Radio, 820 a.m. Anonymous, thanks for waiting. Your question for Trent. No?
You all were mentioning, can you hear me?
Yes, we got you, Anonymous.
You all were mentioning about the young man who was evangelizing the black primitive tribe in southern India.
Mm-hmm.
So he was bringing Christianity, or trying to.
Yes.
Then you mentioned about bringing civilization to a tribe that's not civilized.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So what do you... To bring Christianity to an uncivilized tribe, like mm-hmm. that tribe,
right.
you have to bring civilization. So you're talking about bringing Western civilization to that?
Okay.
Well, I think
that primitive black tribe? I mean, what when you say civilization, what do you mean bringing civilization?
Well, I think bringing a modern understanding of the dignity of the human person, that all human beings have inalienable rights, for example, that human beings are not property. And I'm not saying, of course, that civilization is perfect. Western civilization has had to progress and grapple with moral issues and make moral progress. And the church has oftentimes been at the forefront of that, calling Western civilization to progress on various moral issues, whether it was issues related to slavery, to wages, to the dignity of children and workers, other things like that. My point was simply that all people stand in need of the gospel of Jesus Christ. All people need that no matter where they live in this world. And part of the gospel includes not just teachings about faith and doctrine, but also teachings about morality, how we ought to treat one another. And so the example I gave earlier is that many prehistoric societies were not civilized in one sense. They didn't believe in uniform codes of law that respected the dignity of the human person. So in war, for example, they practiced total warfare. They slaughtered men, women, and children indiscriminately. Whereas in modern civilization, we have the laws of war, which that you can't even kill prisoners of war. That's like under the Geneva Convention. There you can't use cruel and unusual methods on criminals or prisoners, things like that. So that's what I mean by civilization, having this moral progress and understanding the dignity of the human person. And so we should take that with the gospel to the ends of the earth, no matter what cultures that we encounter. And that would include, even if we can, reaching out to indigenous peoples as much as we can to protect their welfare. If that includes giving them medicine first or anything to protect them from illness, I think that should be done. But we should not say that whatever they values they have are good because they are their values, because at the end of the day, human values are not sufficient. At the end of the day, what we need is God's grace to become a child of God through baptism. And that's what we seek to do by following Jesus' command in Matthew 28:19 to go make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. So I hope that's helpful for you and clear up something we brought up earlier in the show that maybe we got a little exuberant about, but still, I got exuberant about.
You didn't. I did.
So I hope that that's helpful, and I'm glad that you called in.
Thanks, Anonymous. I'll tell you what. Civilization, I think, is a very contentious word now.
Well, it's hard. That's a hard word to describe, because there's lots of different kinds of civilization. But at the end of the day, when we talk about it being
modern meaning of civilization.
Yeah.
The traditional meaning of civilization mm-hmm. is to become able to live civilly with one another,
right.
literally to be able to live in cities with one another.
Right. Because when you have a primitive Stone Age mentality,
yeah.
and this may still exist in remote parts of the world, prior to civilization, what you have is power rules ruthlessly.
Yes.
So yeah. you defend your stake. All other people are potential enemies, and you ward them off with threats of power or use of power.
Yeah.
And so you have to respond swiftly and harshly in order to protect yourself. Whereas in civilization, we, and oftentimes take for granted, we can just walk around, we can have arguments, we can have disagreements, sometimes very heated ones.
Yeah.
And sometimes if a law is broken, if you hurt a member of my family, to have justice, I don't just go and kill your family.
No.
That's why in the Bible, one of the most revolutionary moral principles in the Bible, in the book of Exodus, is lex talionis, an eye for an eye. People treat that as bad, but that was a vast improvement in the ancient world.
Over an eye for I'll kill your entire tribe.
Yeah, it was a sense of equality and justice.
Right.
And those are those principles that make civilization a good thing, and that we should promote not a relativism, but the dignity of the human person who can live civilly within society.
Right. We don't mean by civilization telephones or a certain way of dressing or talking or all that. We mean to be able to be civil.
To live fully human as God intends us.
And you know who gives that gift to us? Christ our Savior.
Amen.
He has a tremendous civilizing influence on us. And that's why I don't ever feel ashamed to use the term civilization and civilized. We'll be right back to take your tough moral questions for Trent Horn on Catholic Answers Live after this.